The views and opinions of this podcast are solely those of the creators and do not reflect any streaming service or platform. This podcast contains strong language and contrarian viewpoints that may be objectional to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Three Geeks in a Microphone podcast. I'm Dean.
I'm Art.
I'm Russ.
And today we're going to be taking a look at the 1986 supernatural adventure thriller, The Wraith. So tell me, guys, when was the first time you saw this? Or what's your earliest memories of this movie?
I think I saw it the first time. Probably it was on the USA Network. And I'm going to say sometime around 88, 89. But, yeah, you know, I remember thinking... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I remember thinking that, it was a cool movie. The car was awesome. There was a lot of it that was edited out. So it kind of what I caught at the time didn't make a lot of sense. But I ended up rewatching it later in high school, and it was pretty awesome. I mean, if you can get past that rug Clint Howard's wearing.
What about you,
that's
Russ?
That's his face, dude.
Yeah.
I probably saw it. I know I knew of it. I remember seeing the box, like, at the old video rental place as a kid and wanting to rent it, but not being allowed to because it came off with just enough of a horror movie look that my mom was like, no. But then after that, I completely forgot about it. And it was on TV probably about 10, 15 years ago, just on like your local non-affiliate TV station. And like Art was saying, edited to death, that it didn't make any sense. But it's a lazy Sunday afternoon. I just sat there and watched it. I'm like, okay. But then it's probably about only 2 years ago that I actually saw the whole thing unedited, and it's a typical 80s cheesy movie.
I rented it again at my aunt's. We had gone to the video store, we were getting pizza and movies, and I fell in love with it. And like, this car is awesome. And then years later, I don't know if it's a bootleg or what, but I actually have this on DVD. It's from some fly-by-night company that must have gotten a hold of the rights for it, because it's a really lousy transfer, and it's in this really thick plastic, almost like a big DVD jewel case. I still have it. I've had it for years, and then it finally came out on Blu-ray. This was one of my, just simply because of the car, this is one of my favorite movies. Let's face it. That Interceptor is one of my dream cars. This is the one where if I hit the lottery for $300 million, I'm going to Chrysler and going, you're building me one of these. I don't care what it costs, you're building me one of these. I love this movie. And yes, you guys are both right. It is completely cheesy.
Part of the charm with it, though, is that it gives off kind of a post. If you see the hacked up TV edit, you wonder, like, you're watching it and you're like, is it like a post-apocalyptic movie?
Yeah, it kind of felt a little Mad Max-y, but
yeah,
cleaner. It's like they haven't decided to eat dog food quite yet.
Really? See, because I've never seen the TV edit. I mean, how bad is this thing chopped up?
The one I saw was pretty chopped up. It was mostly just car on road and racing. I didn't even really realize that, like, a spirit or supernatural. I just thought it was like some guy with a super invincible car. And I didn't even know there was a brother. That's how bad the edit, the chopped up version that I saw was.
The USA version wasn't really much better. When I saw it, I thought the guy was an alien. I mean, in a post-apocalyptic, because there's really no mention that they're in Arizona. Even in the full version of it, there's very little other than like seeing like the police car license plate, and they mention it like once briefly.
Well, if you're watching it, when Charlie Sheen rides into town on his bike, he passes a sign that says Brooks, Arizona.
What? Charlie Sheen's in the movie?
Yeah.
But yeah, again, you don't see a lot of that in the hacked up version.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm not even sure if I saw Charlie Sheen in the movie on the one that I saw. It wasn't until afterwards. I'm like, hey, that's Charlie Sheen. You know, when I watched the full version a couple of years ago or whatever.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was. And you also have to realize that I might have missed out on part of the beginning because it was just flipping through the channels when I saw it. So.
Well, it stars Charlie Sheen, Sherilyn Fenn of Twin Peaks fame, Nick Cassavetes, and of course, Randy Quaid. What was his name? Russ, I didn't write it down. Ron Howard's brother.
Clint Howard.
Clint Howard.
And his name was Rughead.
Yes.
In the movie.
And it wasn't until I didn't put two and two together until actually researching it for this. I didn't know who the guy was. I'm like, yeah, he has this ridiculous looking hair. But as I was researching it, I'm like, that's Ron Howard's brother? Good Lord.
Yeah. You look at him, it's like, you know, because Ron Howard, okay, everyone listening, I'm far from looking like Brad Pitt. I'm not exactly good looking. But I feel pretty good about myself and my looks after looking at Clint Howard. And then even Ron Howard, you kind of like, Ron Howard can pass as human. It's kind of like... Clint Howard looks like a science experiment that went wrong. It's like someone dropped the test tube.
I mean, especially
sorry, Clint, if you're listening.
Especially in this. I mean, his hair. Well, I've seen pictures of him lately. He doesn't have much hair anymore. But when this was filmed in 86, what is up with his hair? Was he... It's like sticking straight up, and it's all curly and... Anyways...
Well, the fact that they named him Rughead in the movie, they must, you know, obviously they were trying to really make him look ridiculous.
Well, he was the group's mechanical genius. He was the one that would keep all their cars running. And, well, let's get into the basic plot. It starts off with you have a guy and a girl. They're driving through the desert in, what was it, a Dodge Daytona, right?
Yeah.
They're stopped by this gang, this road pirates. They grab the girlfriend. Nick Cassavetes says to him, he played Packard Walsh. Go figure, the main bad guy is named after a car. But he says to him, he's like, look, if you want your girl back, we're going to race for the title of the car. And he almost loses. It kind of surprised me because like a 76 Vet he's driving?
Yeah, something like that.
And you know the engine's souped. They race him. He tries to kill him, goes back, and he ends up handing him off the title. From there, we see a solo shot. And I will say this. Wherever they filmed this, some of it was gorgeous. Like the straight highways going off into, you know, the distance. It was filmed in Arizona. So as there, you have Charlie Sheen driving up on a dirt bike. Blanche, let me condense this. Charlie Sheen is the reincarnation of a guy named Jamie Hankins. He was dating Sherilyn Fenn while they were up by the river. Packard's gang comes in, knocks her out, kills him, and throws him off a cliff in the back of a car. And now Charlie Sheen is his reincarnated spirit. He's a wraith come back to take revenge on the gang. That's a fair enough summation, right, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can tell it's pretty intricate plot.
Right.
Well thought out.
As we're going forward, there, Charlie Sheen in the form of the Wraith in this black. This is an absolutely gorgeous car. We'll get into this car. The Dodge MS-4 Interceptor. But they pull up next to the burger place and he tempts him to race. And every time he races one of these guys, he ends up killing him. The body comes out like their eyes are sucked out of their sockets and there's no marks on them. He's stealing their souls. Because the first time you see the Wraith in his outfit, it's like this black, what'd you call it? It's almost like body armor, right, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a prototype for the Borg.
I could see that. He's, you know, got the helmet on, and I don't know if you guys noticed this, but like around his arms, his legs, he has these braces. Every time he kills one of these braces disappears.
Well, he's also got, yeah, those scars on him that heal up a little bit, like the one on his neck.
Yep, and the four on his back where he got stabbed. As it goes on, he torments the group. I'm jumping ahead here, but I love the scene where they're in their body chop shop, and the car pulls up and he's standing there with a fucking shotgun. Walks in and he's intimidating him. Now the helmet has like a face shield. Now in the versions I had, like the DVD version, they do a quick shot of the front of the helmet and the face shield pops up. Now in the versions I have, it's kind of vague as to who it is. I mean, you see kind of an outline of a face, but you never really see the face. In the Blu-ray version, they replaced that, and it's obviously Charlie Sheen in that helmet.
When I'm thinking of this movie, I'm still, when I watch the edited version, this is what really embedded into my mind. So
the one thing they absolutely establish is Packard Walsh is an absolute fucking psycho. Sherilyn Fenn, whose name is Carrie, she doesn't remember what happened to her the night of the accident. Packard has told her that they were always together. I don't know if you guys caught that or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the creepiest, most obsessive boyfriend I think I've ever seen in a film. They all go down, like, for example, they all go down to the river for the day. You know, they're floating on the water, and this is when Charlie Sheen meets his dead brother, although he doesn't say anything about it. In fact, the brother, Billy, even says, you know, we're talking about Sherilyn Fenn, you know, she's gorgeous, but you have to wear dark glasses so Packard doesn't catch you looking at her, because he'll go apeshit if you do. I mean, remember when him and her and Charlie Sheen are floating down the river and you're talking, and he's just standing at the end of the river yelling for her to come back. But everyone's afraid of him. It goes back. I think my two favorite characters in this movie are Skank and the Gutter Boy.
Yeah.
Two of Packard's cronies. You have Skank that is, he looks like a stereotypical punk from the 80s. He's got a colored mohawk. But what the fuck? He's always drinking like...
Yeah, he's drinking like hydraulic fluid at one point. Another time he's drinking brake fluid.
Right. He's drinking brake fluid, or he's sniffing WD-40.
Yeah, he was like inhaling it.
It's like, what the fuck? But even Packard says to him, he says to him at one point, he says, get rid of that zombie piss you're drinking before it turns you into a mushroom. The first time you see him, when they stop that couple on the road, he's drinking hydraulic fluid going, man, I'm tweaking, dude. I'm like, what the fuck? Why isn't he dead from drinking brake fluid and hydraulic fluid?
Yeah, never mind the fact that, like you said, he was huffing WD-40.
Someone should have just lit a match by him.
And then there's his kind of like... His sidekick, Gutter Boy. I don't know what this guy's problem is.
He was like the prototype for Beavis.
Nah, dude, that's disrespectful to Beavis. Don't say.
But if you look at his face and like his facial features, it makes you wonder if they used him for Beavis.
Now that you mention it, I can kind of see that, but he's like, is he like functionally retarded or something? I mean.
I think that they were just burnout, druggy burnouts.
Hmm.
Kind of like proto-meth heads.
Proto-meth heads. Well, you got one guy drinking hydraulic fluid. Maybe they should have, you know, changed up their drug of choice.
Yeah.
So everyone's hanging out at Big K's Burgers, which interestingly did not exist when this movie was filmed. That whole thing was built just for the movie. Same thing with the hotel across the street.
Sorry, I'm just kind of listening and kind of rethinking the entire movie, because it's one of those things. It's so much. It's like a sci-fi meets the 70 car chase movies, where there's not a, you know, it's just watching the cars, and that's the biggest entertainment part of it. It's not so much that, you know, the characters are there.
Well, I would agree. The cars are definitely the stars of this movie. But like when they do the initial chase for they race the Wraith. The music they use, let's see, what was the first one they were using? It was an Ozzy Osbourne song, wasn't it? It wasn't Secret Loser. Secret Loser was used on the very first race on the road with the Daytona. But in every race, they have period rock music. And you got to admit, it's cool as hell. Because
yeah,
they're
that, go that ahead. Was my favorite part. My favorite part of the movie was listening to the music and watching the cars. In fact, I'm drawing blanks because I just watched it last week again to catch up. Given life has been rather stressful, so I probably didn't focus as much as I should have for doing a movie review. But my mind just keeps going back to the cars and the music and not the characters, except for Clint Howard's hair.
And like I said, as he races, the Wraith doesn't win. He kills whoever he's racing against. And in fact, Augie Fisher is the first one to die. I can't remember the actor's name. I didn't write his name. I've never seen him in anything else. Have you guys?
Not that I can think of. It's Griffin O'Neill.
Okay. But he's killed. And then, of course, we're introduced to the guy who has the best one-liners in this whole movie, Randy fucking Quaid. Who plays the sheriff.
I actually had a hard time taking him seriously as the sheriff. And part of it's his voice. And the other part of it, it's like Cousin Eddie's trying to be a hard ass.
Right. I was thinking, I'm like, because no. If you notice at the beginning of the movie, as the comets or whatever are going together, forming up the car, do you notice one of them blows through a sign that says, you know, reelect Sheriff Loomis, with big picture of Randy Quaid? It blows right through his face.
Yeah.
Kind of makes me wonder, did he not get reelected, and that's why his real name is Eddie? And later on, his life goes to shit, and we see him again in, like, you know, Family Vacation.
Oh, go ahead, Russ.
I was gonna say, wasn't when they first the first Family Vacation, the road trip, wasn't he living in Arizona when they found him? Came up to Cousin Eddie's.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I have to go back and check that out.
Yeah, because he's definitely out west.
I just remember. Yeah, and the daughter that stirs the Kool-Aid with her arm.
Oh, that was just so wrong. I don't know why they call this Hamburger Helper. This stuff tastes great all by itself. No.
But, well, the other thing though, like back to Clint Howard, I couldn't look at him and not think, this is, you know, Booger's like retarded younger brother. If you watch how he walks around in the film,
yes,
like when he's standing between the cars. At the beginning of the races, and he's got that rag, and he's waving it around. He looks from far away like they went to Wish.com ordering Booger, and that's what they got.
or have you seen Eraserhead?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh God. Booger and Eraserhead's love child.
Oh, or Jesus.
Or Poindexter and Booger's love child.
Oh. Oh, and what is up with these glasses, man? I'm like, they're these tinted, ridiculously thick Coke bottle glasses.
It kind of reminds me of something like a little bit of John Denver went bad or something. Because in those 70s hippie look that John Denver had before he went with the...
Are you implying that he's like the love child of John Denver and a Muppet?
It's possible.
But he is walking around in a members only jacket. Through the whole movie, he's walking around in a grayish white members only jacket.
Are you, are, Is it walking or waddling?
You're right. It's waddling. In fact, the only time you see him not in that jacket is when he's in his white lab coat working on the digital radio killers, which I don't quite get how that works, but okay. God. So we get in, like I said, as we're introduced to Randy Quaid, who now has it out for the gang trying to figure out who was driving the other car. You're right, though. The movie itself, the plot is almost inconsequential. I mean, it's there. I mean, in a nutshell, he kills them all till he's left with Packard. He kills him in a really awesome chase scene. I mean, come on, the thing with the truck hauler, and it flips over and shit because the cop car slams into it, and the chain breaks while it's dragging one of the cars. Most of the energy and effort was done in the chase scenes. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
They knew it was a movie about a car, and they didn't put any effort in the acting at all.
Oh.
I couldn't imagine
what
it would be one of these people that auditioned, and yeah, you're going to get to star in this movie. And then you get on set, and you see the car. You just kind of would... You would almost have to just say, well, I'm not even going to put any effort in because no one's going to give a crap about me. You see that car.
I think Russ is actually implying that there's a reason that Charlie Sheen became an alcoholic. He got on set and he was like, fuck, Randy Quaid and Clint Howard, shit.
I mean, I just did Platoon, man, and now I'm doing this?
Yeah.
Speaking of, the star of this movie, the absolute star, is the car. It was a collaboration project between Dodge and Chrysler and PPG for the design for the car. Actually started in 83 as a one-off project. The car set its own top speed record at 194.8 miles an hour, with an engine outputting 440 horsepower at 25 PSI. This is a gorgeous car. There were only four of them built by Chrysler and PPG. It was the 86 pace car for the Indy 500. Now, before all of the pace cars before that time were just modified production cars. Chrysler wanted to do something special. They wanted to turn a four-cylinder stock car. They wanted to see if they could turn it into a race car. I live here in Michigan, and any of my Michigan listeners, once the design was started, it wasn't all Chrysler. There was a couple other companies that helped here. There was a small company in Madison Heights, Michigan, that did the modeling and all of the body work for this car. They created the body. They produced the molds. I looked it up. The four prototypes of this car at the time were $1.5 million a piece. In today's money, it's $3.6 million per car. 2 weeks after the Indy run with this car, they were contacted by the production crew, and two of those cars were shipped to Arizona for this movie.
You notice they didn't let Tony Danza drive it.
That's smart. That's very smart. And I guess one of these cars were slightly damaged during filming because there was the two prototypes were out there, and then they made six replicas for the actual race scenes. And because a lot of times these cars are completely destroyed because the Wraith will park it across the road and the other car slams into it and whatnot. But they wanted to make sure that none of these cars were damaged. But I guess in one of the race scenes, part of the front end was scuffed up really bad. The paint job alone on these cars were $80,000 just for the paint job. And Charlie Sheen ended up, it was years later, because Chrysler was not selling their prototypes. He bought one of them. It is now sitting, or I guess last year it came up for auction. And it sold for like $300,000, $500,000. But the original car, the first one off the production line, is actually in a museum in Auburn Hills, Michigan. And at the time, until the Viper came out, this was the fastest production car in the collection. at 195 miles per hour. It's an absolute gorgeous car. It's, like I said, it's one of my dream cars in that color scheme. Because it, did you know the wheels of this car, the color, they call it root beer brown. Root beer brown on a base black. It's a base black coat, and then they did 26 coats of pearlize, and then over 30 coats of clear on the top. Because if you watch it in the movie, it looks black at night until the sun hits it, and as it moves, you see flashes of purple going through it. At the time, this was a new thing. And I was reading here, a guy by the name of Lyle Sir, I think I'm pronouncing that right, was a huge fan of this movie, and he tracked down what happened to the molds. He was able to find them in a junkyard, the molds of the original movie, or for the original car, and he's built four replicas from the original molds. He built one for himself, one for his buddy, and I think he gave the other two away for like car shows and auto shows. But if you look online, there's a ton of how-to videos on how to build one of these cars yourself from scratch.
I think at one point I saw something that you could actually do it with a Dodge Daytona.
Yeah, you can. And a Fiero. You can actually build one off of a Fiero body, too. Or a Fiero chassis.
Right.
I don't know why you would want to, but...
There's actually quite a few kit cars that they made to be built off of the Fiero chassis, because I think no one gave a crap about Fieros.
Hmm. Well, ironically, you could actually... There was a guy in Florida, I think he was in Kissimmee, Florida. He was actually building dashes for him, like complete Knight Rider conversion parts for him. But it would still be a Fiero, but it would have like the Knight Rider nose cone on it, and you could have the complete dash.
Oh, wow.
And then like the upper consoles and things.
Nice.
But they were scaled for a Fiero.
Huh. Because the guy who designed this car, his name was Bob Ackerman. And he was one of the lead race designers for Chrysler. Like I said, he wanted to see if it was possible to take a mid-size four-cylinder and turn it into a race car. But he knew the only way to do this was the body had to be ridiculously aerodynamic. And that's why, I think that's why this car is so popular. But, so they gave permission to use the car in the movie because they wanted the exposure, because Chrysler at one point was seriously thinking about putting this into production as something to go against like the Corvette or like a high-end sports car. But when Bob Ackerman went to the premiere of the movie and saw the movie, he walked out midway through. I guess he absolutely hated the movie, but then years later he kind of relented and said, the only reason people know this car exists is because of the movie The Wraith. Just think about it. I didn't watch a lot of... I mean, who pays attention to... Unless you're a big race fan, who pays attention to pace cars at the beginning of the Indy 500? This brought this movie out to a way bigger audience than The Race did. And if you look at now, there's legions of people that want this car because of the movie. So let me ask you guys... Do you think Chrysler made a mistake not maybe paring it down a little bit and not putting it into production? Because that was one of the big problems, is it was going to be so expensive to produce, but if they pared it down, they might have been able to do it. What do you guys think?
Honestly, I think they probably did the right choice for their company, because while there's a lot of fans that would want it, a lot of fans back at the time wouldn't have been able to afford it. The older generations that were buying cars probably would have just kind of walked past it. Younger kids would have drooled over it, but wouldn't have been able to afford it, even if they scaled it down, made it more affordable. It's not until, you know, they'd probably do really good if they were to fire it back up and make a production car of it now, that, you know, like some kind of nostalgic. You know, it's kind of like one of those things where you wish they would have made it, so then it's more available for fans to get and have replicas and enjoy this car. But I mean, could you, you know, it's like, would your parents have bought this car?
It would have been so impractical for a family, just, you know, like seating alone.
Yeah.
Oh, right. It's a sports car. There's no other way around it. But
right.
But I could see some yuppie back then, you know, with money to burn, buying one of these just because it was cool, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like the same thing, like with people who buy Ferraris and Lamborghinis. It would have been still, even if they produced it, it probably would have been such a limited number that it still wouldn't really be, you know, it'd probably be kind of like the DeLorean that everyone wants, but there's only, what, 5,000 of them ever made?
Something like that. And well, and again, this one had gull wing doors too. Maybe that was its Achilles heel, was its gull wing doors, you know? I don't know. The movie as a whole was, getting back to the movie for a second, the movie as a whole was, you're right, it was fun, but you could condense it down to get rid of some of the plot. Although it is cool at the end when the brother realizes that Charlie Sheen is his brother. Now, the part I don't get is, okay, this car is now wanted in the, you know, is they're on the lookout for this car and the deaths of, what, 5 people, and his brother just hands him the keys.
Yeah, it's like, enjoy prison.
Right.
Love you, kid brother. You're going to jail. Because it's like, what the law enforcement is going to really think? Oh, it wasn't me. It was a supernatural being from...
That was my dead brother.
But then again, if you go back, if you remember when the scene where they're chasing the Wraith and they have a roadblock set up for him on that bridge, he blows through the cars, not a scratch on it, drives down, and then it separates into the 6 comets or whatever. Randy Quaid saw that. So he knows this thing. He even says towards the end, after Packard dies, his deputy says, well, why don't we set up roadblocks? We can still catch him. He's like, what for? We can't stop something that can't be stopped. He knows it's supernatural, in origin anyways, but it kind of makes me wonder, kind of wish they would have done a sequel. What happened to the brother with the car? He's driving around, cops are always following him.
He's on the chain gang, arrested.
Cars are pounded.
Cars are pounded.
Boy, I drove a car that someone else did.
In some ways, the other cars that the gang were driving, let's see. Does anyone know what year that yellow Pontiac was with the blower? I didn't look it up. Did any of you guys?
No.
That's not the same model. That's not Rockford's car. That was a little different, right? Was that a Trans Am or a Firebird?
Oh, shoot, man. Now I'm just drawing a blank.
I don't know, because you really didn't see any emblems on it.
Right. Well, you know, based on its shape, it had to be. I'm pretty sure it was a Firebird.
Well, I actually was gonna say, man, I thought it was a Trans Am.
Okay, maybe you're right.
You know, I was gonna guess it was a 77 or a 78.
Okay. What I found is when they were racing, did you notice the flaps on that blower never opened?
Yeah.
The blower wasn't functional. It was just for show. And my favorite is after the Wraith comes in and shoots up all the cars, they all got Bondo on them and shit.
Yeah.
Like the back end, the thing I don't get is Packard's car was never, well, no, it was hit in the back end. That's why there was Bondo and shit on the back in the final race. His hood's all fucked up because it's all Bondoed.
I didn't get about the shotgun was, well, you know, the shotgun was neat. But it had the chasing LEDs on it.
Uh-huh. And it was a FAMAS 12. The only thing I didn't like is, why didn't he pull down the folding stock?
Who knows?
I don't know. All in all, it was a damn good movie. I mean, I've watched it more times than I can count, just for the chase scenes. Hell, if you go on YouTube, if you don't want to see it and just see the chase scenes, you can look up just the chase scenes from the movie. Someone did a compilation of all the scenes with just the MS4. I mean, you gotta admit, they do show the engine at one point when he raises the back hood, and it's got the lightning and shit going through it.
Yeah.
Packard, get a load of this. Kind of makes you think, maybe we shouldn't be fucking with this, if you know, because the sound as it was revving was a heartbeat. It's almost as if the car was alive. All in all, though, it's a good movie. I definitely, it's something I would watch once a year because I love the car.
It's definitely got rewatchability. I mean, it's the kind of movie you would watch like on a Saturday afternoon if nothing else is going on.
Right.
You know, it's raining out or it's sunny out. It doesn't matter. You just mowed the lawn. You don't have anything else to do. Watch The Wraith.
Right.
Or, yeah. You turned your ankle. You got a stomach flu. You just needing the comfort of something fun. And that's when you watch something like this. You can sit back and eat your chicken noodle soup and watch a transforming Charlie Sheen kill people.
Yeah, you know.
And I wonder if that's where he got tiger blood from. So, probably, I don't know.
Hazard a guess on that one.
How would you rate... Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put it?
Oh, if it was me, 7.8.
Oh, okay. Russ?
I think I'd put it like, okay, I was thinking 6, but that's like because of my, like I said, my mind is stuck on the edited version that I saw, but seeing so much of Clint Howard, I would have to give it an 8.
Really?
Well, not because of Clint. I'd give it a 7.5 to an 8 just because it's such a fun movie that, now if you're looking to take it seriously, then of course you're not going to get it any high, but it's, for what it is, it definitely falls into that 8 zone to me.
Huh. See, I'd give it probably about a 7.6, 7.7. It's, me personally, I wouldn't give it an 8. It's not that good, but you're definitely right. It is it's a fun movie to watch on a rainy day. Or if you just want to watch a really cool race scene, a car chase, this would be the movie to do it.
But it also just screams mid-1980s.
Oh, it does. That's one of the reasons I love it. I mean,
even that scene when they're like at the car hop or getting the burgers and everything, that restaurant, the whole vibe of that whole scene, as stupid as it was, just people talking, just looking at the background and just kind of feeling the atmosphere. Because I don't think they were acting. I think they probably were just filming someone having lunch.
Well, what's funny is that, like I said, that burger place didn't exist. They actually built that for the movie. And, well, I guess they must have, because you see them cooking the burgers, so they must have installed a grill.
Well, like that wouldn't be too hard. It's probably propane powered.
Right. And from what I understand, I think it's still there. The shell of that building, I think, still exists. I don't think they've torn it down yet. I know a lot of this was filmed, I believe it was outside of Scottsdale, Arizona.
It was in, according to Internet Movie Database, it was Tucson.
It was Tucson, okay. And you got to admit, the desolate feeling. Because, for example, we've seen them hop in their cars from that burger joint, drive, and then race through the mountains. So my question is, and then later on when you see Charlie Sheen pick up Carrie and they're driving through town when Skank and Gutter Boy try to run them off the road, what's the distance here? I mean, because
based on... I can definitely tell you're city boy. That doesn't, you know, where I live out here in good old Silverton, Oregon, that can easily happen. We have a downtown, and then within 2 miles, less than a mile, you're in country roads.
Okay, because it's like where the burger place is, there's nothing around. There's just nothing there. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're in the middle of a crowded city. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that you can, you'll drive.
Well, that could be just fancy editing, too.
True. Very true.
Yeah.
But no, you fancy are. Edit.
But yeah, that can easily be your small communities outside of a mid-sized city, because on the way to Salem, it's like that. You'll be driving along and there's a small fruit stand or a store nothing for at least 4 miles around, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're in Salem.
Well, it's like we were talking about when we were talking about Hollywood Nights, the very end of that film. That do you remember, like when the police car crashes into what's his name's car while they were getting busy?
Yeah,
and they did a kind of a long shot of that whole street. Did anybody recognize that street?
Mm-mm.
It's the same street they filmed The Burbs on and piles of other movies and so TV shows. In fact, at one point, you actually even see that street in, like, Dukes of Hazzard.
Is it a set? Or was
it was like a backlot set. In fact, I think that's also, I could be wrong, but I think that's also the same one that, like, the Addams Family house was on.
Huh.
The Leave It to Beaver house, a bunch of other houses that were in, like, but where I was going with this is, I mean, they can edit stuff from different angles because, and you would never realize it. Like, look how many times, like, the town set for Back to the Future, where, like, the clock tower was used in other things. It was used in like some episodes of the Incredible Hulk.
Yep, it was used in Gremlins.
Yeah, and Gremlins, and so it, you know, it's like it's in a film. It's actually kind of hard to gauge.
Oh, definitely. Really.
Yeah, because they can you know film a shot from one angle, and then edit it so that, you know, like when they change direction, it looks like an entirely different town.
Mm-hmm. I thought I had read that this entire movie was all shot on location in Arizona, though.
Yeah, it was in two, according to Internet Movie Database, it's got a list of all the filming locations.
Okay.
And and most of them were in Tucson, Arizona, with the exception of Davis Monthan Air Force Base.
Yeah. But yeah, like Art was saying with editing, the movie Bandits, the first bank robbery scene in that movie was filmed here in town. I just watched it the other day because I saw it was on the street that they're going down. They show homes in Silverton, and then right down the street in the movie is another town from like 50 miles away, and it all looks like it's the same.
Oh, I see.
Same drive down the road, but in the movie it looks like it's the same street, but in reality it's like three or four different filming locations. Mm-hmm. Even if they're nearby, they're not connected.
They're all kind of edited together. I gotcha. But yeah, as a whole, this is a great little movie. It's just a fun, and you're right. It places it squarely mid-80s. I mean, come on. The first time you see Sherilyn Fenn walking out, she's in a acid wash jean jacket, wearing, you know, go-go boots. Like, and didn't she have like a feather clipped in her hair?
I think so.
So, but I think, this was her first movie. She's actually from Michigan. She was a model, and then this was her first major film. And then, what is his name? She got recruited to do Twin Peaks as Audrey. And that's what most people know her from, is Twin Peaks. And she also did Boxing Helena, which was by Jessica Lynch, which was that's just a weird movie. But, yeah.
She was on Cheers for an episode. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Now I want to go see that just to see her. She probably won Sam Malone's Conquest.
Yeah, we probably see more of her, though, in The Wraith.
Yes. As a whole, would this be a recommend movie?
Oh, yeah.
I would say it depends on the person. Most, I would say yeah, but there's a few people that would be completely lame and not like it.
Well, anything else you want to add to this, guys?
No,
I'd say that pretty well wraps it up.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we will catch you guys on the next one.